sahano bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinamadhitamaskramadhirvishavahai om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 91. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. By showing their smiling glances full of prema maya, affection, anuraga, they, or Krishna, enjoyed many ever new intimate exchanges, with great hankering because they could not be completely satisfied. Thus it should be understood that Krishna is controlled by the prema maya actions of his wives, right? Not the kama maya, the prema maya, right? This is illustrated by his actions such as stealing of the Parijata tree and by statements such as the following. The Lord says, I cannot sleep at night because of thinking of Rukmini, right? So he's just thinking of her devotion. And because of thinking of that devotion, then he's so absorbed in those aspects of loving exchange that then he can't sleep. You know, that's his absorption. Sukadeva Goswami says, being enchanted by the smiling glances, he found it difficult to leave their houses, right? So that, because he has to go to work, yes. You know, like that. But the point is that going to work, then what will be there is all the devotees that are there. But that will be all in parental, friendship, servitorship, you know, shanta, like this. So it won't have the intensity of the relationships that will be there in the conjugal. So the devotional exchange then will be much more intense. So, therefore, leaving that for the other, but the same time is because he reciprocates and interacts with everyone, then he'll go to the hall because they're all devotees. So, therefore, he'll leave the wives to go be with the other devotees. And at the same time is because you have the aspect of maryada that's there in Dwarka, then following the rules and regulations will be part of the process. Mm-hmm. Right? So, Vrindavan is following the rules and regulations in relationship to it pleases Krishna. But in Dwarka, then we'll see it follows because it sets the proper example. Like that. So, yes.
So, you say that it's not the... You say that it's not the husband and wife interaction that attracts Krishna. It's the devotion.
Yes.
So, in that case, why is it that the conjugal is the most intense? Like,
because it covers all the other aspects that all the other rasas have.
Okay.
So each rasa includes the last rasa, so that means conjugal includes all the other four. So therefore it has a fullness that the others won't have. Mm-hmm. That's it. Okay.
In the queens of Dwarka, you know, though they are wives of Krishna, they still have to have that particular aspect to some degree, you know, in order to increase the intensity.
They have to have...
That what is in Braja, you know, Parkya is talking...
They have to have something that's in Braja. It's called prema.
No, I'm talking about the Parkya aspect. A separation is required. Otherwise, if he's...
No, but separation is not because of the Parakya. Separation is just how relationships work. So that works on all of them. Cowherd boys also. They're separated from Krishna, their attraction grows. So I'm saying it's just the separation will add to that. But the point is there he's doing it because that has the aspect that he has duties to perform and all those things like that. And then, you know, to be with those persons. Right? Means what is he leaving in Braj when he goes out to tend the cows? He's leaving parental rasa. You know, which has its fullness and everything, but at the same time there's that nice, that you know, open and fun aspect of the friend. So it just gives a different flavor. So it's a different taste. But here you're leaving the conjugal rasa. so that won't work as easy. Just like Krishna in the morning to leave Radharani and the gopis to go back to his house, then that won't work so easy. You know, in other words, the time has come for them to go, they're not going. Right? And so then Vrinda has to make some arrangements, you know, that somebody will come and say, I think she sends in the monkey, and the monkey comes and says, Jatila's coming. So then they all run off. You know, but otherwise they won't go. You know, so in Dwarka he reluctantly goes, and Vrindavan he won't go. Yeah, so it's not because of the separation thing. Separation is just how all relationships have that element of being nourished. Yeah.
You said that in Vrindavan, according to the rules, it was Jesus Krishna, and then
what? Means the rules there are what are his natural rules to please him in sweetness. Then the rules that are there in Dwarka will be have the added, I mean, sweetness is there, but it'll have the added aspect of grandeur and all that. And then we'll just see in Vaikuntha adjust the rules of grandeur. Sorry? No, Krishna, because that's part of the thing he does when he's performing these kind of pastimes, sets an example. Because in Vrindavan, it's not specifically setting an example, because there is Swayam Krishna, then he is just enjoying himself. Because technically, the mood that's there is an expansion of his mood in Vrindavan. Right? So therefore, then, as he expands as Baladev, Baladev is Mahanarayan, Mahanarayan as the Chaturvyuha. And so Vasudeva, the Chaturvyuha, that's Krishna in Dwarka.
Maharaj, when we heard about in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Gop Kumar went to Vaikuntha, and some of the Vaikuntha Vasis pulled him aside and said, this is the etiquette, this is how you behave.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
And then he saw the Lord and he just couldn't do it. He was so spontaneous.
Yeah,
Gopal!
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's just a difference in flavor. So that's all that we're getting, is we're bringing out the flavor that's there, like that. The secondary is just the method through which it's being discussed. So our discussion of the secondary aspects is to appreciate the very variety of rasa that he is experiencing with the devotees. Right? Does that make sense? I mean, and where it's applicable, it may be something that we follow. Like, it's not, Krishna sets the example, yes, you should lay in bed at night not able to sleep because you're thinking about your wife. That's not the example he's setting here. This is an example of prema. Like that. So, yeah. Is that here? Living amongst the jewel among women, the Lord played at like an ordinary person. Right? So what an ordinary person, what do he do that? So in other words, that's where ordinary personness is from. Is from Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the next verse describes the queen's action of mental menial service to express their love, Anubhava, having Krishna as the object of their prema. Right? Right. So, you know, in here is that we see the reflection here as we're discussing the Vedanta Sutra, that how Krishna is the ingredient cause. So all the different things that go on here, the mechanics that go on in the material world, because they have their basis in Krishna. So that's why if they're seen in relationship to Krishna and practiced in a way that pleases Krishna, then it becomes actually real. But if we just do it because it pleases ourselves, then that's an illusion, because it doesn't come separately on its own. It's because Krishna, because we'll take part in something, and the mood and flavor that we get from it, then we're very inspired by it. But why is that? Why are we inspired? Because it's already there. It's an existing thing. It's not that we created it. You know, it's not that Romeo and Juliet, we have to, you know, offer all respects to them, because before them there was no conjugal rasa, and that by them getting together, now it's all started, and so now we can follow. No. It's always been there. And so as people come in touch with that, that is tasted. But because they don't see Krishna connected with it, therefore it seems glorious on its own. Right? But the qualities there that are glorious, those are because those are found in Krishna and his relationship with his devotees. Does that make sense? You know, so if you did an analogy of Romeo and Juliet in connection to what it is that they're doing that's actually proper in connection with rasa, that's why it's outstanding. But still, then the problem is then they're both dead and they get no benefit from it. While if these aspects are appreciated in connection with Krishna, you get the eternal benefit even though you're dead. Yes.
On a less romantic level.
Less romantic.
Anubhava level of the queens is different from
But this is romantic, Anubhava.
Yes.
I mean, if you're talking about less romantic meaning, there's the Mahabhava of the gopis, and now a less romantic meaning, the Anubhava of the queens. Then yes, okay.
Less romantic topic, more analytical one.
Okay, okay.
So Anubhava of the queens, is that the highest level they can achieve?
Yes.
And the gopis, that's
Mahabhava. So all gopis are on Mahabhava. Then Radharani's group will be in the level of Mahabhava above that. And there's three levels of Mahabhava. Mm-hmm. So all the gopis will be in the lowest level. Mm-hmm. The followers of Radharani will be on the middle level, and Radharani's on the top level. Mm-hmm. So that means that bhava that she tastes, that's the one that Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya to taste. Mm-hmm. Like that. So we'll get into that in the next course. When we get into Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Maharaj, where it says Anubhava there in the script, is that referring to her level of love, or is it referring to Anubhava means the expression of her love?
I would say it's the expression, but still, it's valid because we brought up before when we were discussing about the gopis that the acharyas mentioned that the queens can only get up to Anubhava, because they were pointing out how the gopis get to Mahabhava, and they were explaining Mahabhava. So from that, because it uses the same word, then that brought, so is that the case here? And so then, just confirming.
And in Braj, who else is on the level of the Anubhava?
I think the parents.
And the current voice?
I think they're the one below that.
The voice.
Yeah. But the confidential friends of Krishna, they also get to Mahabhava. Because they're the ones involved in arranging for his conjugal pastimes. So it's just those few. Subal. Subal? Ujjvala, Sridhama, that, like that. They come to that platform. In that connection, when they're with Krishna and the pastimes of the cowherd boys, it only gets to that level. Like that. But they can get to, they can appreciate the level of rasa that's going on with the gopis, they can appreciate. So they're tasting that level. Yeah. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that the next verse describes the queen's action. Okay. Having Krishna as the object of their prema, Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Although the Supreme Lord's queens each had hundreds of maidservants, they choose to personally serve the Lord by approaching Him humbly, offering Him a seat, worshipping Him with excellent paraphernalia, bathing and massaging His feet, giving Him pan to chew, fanning Him, anointing Him with fragrant sandalwood paste, adorning Him with flower garlands, dressing His hair, arranging His bed, bathing Him, and presenting Him with various gifts. So these are all the different activities they would do out of their ecstatic love. So then, in here, then it would be that aspect of, like Prabhu was saying, the Anubhava, that seeing Krishna, then that invokes in them the desire to do these activities. Right? So the Anubhava is generally, it's the mental state that is there from the Vishayan Ashray, that interaction, but we generally see it involves a physical reaction. So an endeavor, an emotion, like these kind of things. Yes? Also, what's interesting here is, now if we put this into, how you say, contemporary English, then we would say, okay, that, you know, these Supreme Lord's queens, they would serve the Lord by approaching Him humbly and offer Him a seat, worshipping, you know, offering Him a seat, excellent paraphernalia, massage, you know, foot massage, pond to chew, fanning, anointing, fragrant, you know, they'd leave the hymn out each time, because they would take it, that means, in other words, if you handed in this sentence, you know, in your, you know, how you say, language class, you know, anywhere, you know, like that, other, you know, above sixth grade, the teacher would hand this back, that it's wrong, it's bad, Because, you know, why are you repeating this hymn every time? Right? Because for them, it's just about getting things done. It's not about relationship. So Sukadev Goswami is pointing out that they're doing this for him. They're doing that for him. It's all about him, that relationship with him. Does that make sense?
Yes.
No English teachers here that I attended?
Okay.
No? Okay.
The anubhav of the queens and the anubhav of the gopis are the same.
Anubhav of the queens and the anubhav of the gopis are the same.
Mm. So here only the ashura factor is the addition.
That's there, but then the means activities that are there will be there, but the parakia, because the queens don't manifest man.
Mm.
You know, so they don't get angry. The only one you see that sometimes does is Satyabhama. And that, you know, but that's kind of on her own. But Rukmini is only when Krishna pushed it to the point where she fainted, then only then it manifests. But with the gopis, then because that comes up, then you may see aspect these and more. So with the queens, you'll say this. And so the gopis will have that and more stuff. Okay? 7 to 19. Krishna's progeny. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Among Lord Krishna's wives, each of whom had 10 sons, I previously mentioned 8 principal queens. Now I recite for you the names of those 8 queens' sons headed by Prajumna. The first son of Queen Rukmini was Prajumna, and also born of her were Charudeshna, Sudeshna, and the powerful Charudeha, along with Sucharu, Charugupta, Bhadracharu, Charuchandra, Vicharu, and Charu, the 10th. So, you see, there's a theme. Yeah. You see, a lot of times with the kings, there'll be one word, and all the children will have that word in their name some way. There'll be some addition or this or that.
If you yell out, "Oh, Charu," that'll look.
Yeah. So then you have to say the whole name. Hey, you. Yeah, you, the one over there. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, each of them was strong, Viryavan. Bhadracharu was younger than Charugupta. The succession is from oldest to youngest. The 10th is stated as such to emphasize that there was not an 11th son and that Prajumna was the eldest. Right, so how do we take as such? And Charu the 10th. Right, instead of say and Charu, because then you might think, is there more? No, it's as Charu the 10th, meaning that's it, you know. Yeah, like Henry the 8th. I don't think there were any Henrys after that. That was the last one.
Henry the 8th.
Yes. Yeah, so there was Henry, and Henry the 8th. Yes. Yeah. Okay. The Lord was all attractive, Harihi. And thus, his sons were similar according to the maxim. Like the seed, so the sprout. Oh, okay, so that's the original of the apple and tree, yeah. Much better.
Because Krishna is attractive, that means beautiful. That's the reason why Rukmini's all sons are named as Charu something. Charu means beautiful and attractive.
Charu means beautiful.
Beautiful and attractive.
Oh, okay. Attractive. Okay. None of them, indicating the word cha repeated, were less than their father. This was stated before, but for emphasis, it is repeated. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, the 10 sons of Satyabhama were Banu, Subanu, Svarbanu, Prabhanu, Banuman, Chandrabanu, Brihadbanu, Atibanu, the 8th, and Sribanu and Pratibanu. Okay. Samba, Sumitra, Purujit, Satyajit, Sahasrajit, Vijaya, Chitraketu, Vasuman, Dravida, and Kratu were the sons of Jambavati. These 10, headed by Samba, were their father's favorites. Okay, so that means from Sribanu. So that's why the break there. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, 3 lines list Satyabhama's sons. Atibanu was elder to Sribanu. The order is from eldest to youngest again, right? Just that Atibanu would be up at the beginning. Otherwise, the order remains the same. Same as before with Rukmini sons. Though Jambavati was elder, Satyabhama's sons are mentioned first out of greater love for her and Satyabhama's excellent position. That will be explained later. The next three lines list Jambavati's sons. Instead of Dravina, sometimes Dravida is seen. These only were confirmed as sons of Jambavati by their father. In the Shamba Purana, it is stated that by the arrangement of Narada, Samba tried to deceive the sages with the iron lump. This was the will of the Lord, to teach common people, as was the consequent curse on the dynasty. In other words, you don't mess around with those who are senior. You know, you don't try to trick them, you don't deal badly. It's just not done. Even they do something wrong, it's still, you don't deal badly. Right? This idea, oh, they did bad, now I can deal badly. No, that never applied. They dealt badly, you deal properly. Try to correct it, or if you're not in a position, then you just leave it for those who can correct it. But this idea is, now I have the right. No, there's no such thing. Because if it didn't work out for those who were very dear to him, right, because Samba was one of, because Samba's, you know, there, then why would it work out for us? Right, Krishna's own son, then it created havoc, the result of it. So why wouldn't it create for us?
Told as Krishna's favorites among all.
Yeah, his Krishna's favorite, yeah. Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the sons of Nagnajiti were Vira, Chandra, Ashvasena, Chitragu, Vegavan, Vrisha, Ama, Shanku, Vasu, and the opulent Kunti. Shruta, Kavi, Vrisha, Vira, Shambhu, Bhadra, Shanti, Darsha, and Purnamasa were sons of Kalindi. Her youngest son was Somaka. Madra's sons were Pragosha, Gatravan, Simha, Bala, Prabala, Urdagha, Mahashakti, Shakti, Saha, Oja, and Aparajita. No, Aparajita. Footnote 25. Madra is also known as Lakshmana. Right, because she, I think, is from the Madra province.
Yes.
So then she's known as Madra. Like Madri, she's known like that. Yeah. Saha and Oja are sons. The personification of Sahas, mental strength, and Ojas, strength of senses, right? Because they're all expanding from Krishna, so these are all different. So they all have different flavors in that. Like we saw with Rukmini's sons, they all had that aspect of all that very attractiveness. Then other sons will have other flavors, just as the queens. Then they're all expanding from Rukmini, so they all have a different, you know, particular flavor that's there. Rukmini will have all the flavors, and they'll have a particular combination of those flavors. Does that make sense? Like Radharani has all the flavors, and then the other gopis, the Astasaki and the others, then they all have a specific aspect of that, of her flavor. Right? So, in other words, you're tasting the complete, and then also all the side things. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say you have khichdi, which has potatoes in it, and then you take potatoes and make a different preparation out of it, like you fry them into something, and then eat that with the khichdi. It's not, well, hey, this is potatoes and that's potatoes, but no, because it's different. So it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mitravinda's sons were Vrika, Harsha, Anila, Gridha, Gridhara, Vardhana, Unada, Mahamsa, Pavana, Vahni, and Kshudhi. Sangramajit, Brihadsena, Sura, Praharana, Arijit, Jaya, and Subhadra were the sons of Bhadra, along with Vamana, Ayur, and Satyika. Diptiman, Tamratapta, and others were the sons of Lord Krishna and Rohini. Right? So, because Rohini is the head of the 16,100. So now, he's just described the eight. And then he's saying, like this. Right? Yeah. Diptiman, Tamratapta, and others were the sons of Rohini and, you know, the Adis. Right? Okay. Lord Krishna's son Prajumna fathered the greatly powerful Aniruddha in the womb of Rukmavati, the daughter of Rukmi.
So this is the second wife of Pradyumna.
Yes. Yeah, it has to be. bliss is too uniluted. So. O king, this took place while they were living in the city of Bhojakata. So that's their father's place. Her father's place. Okay. My dear king, the sons and grandsons of Lord Krishna's grandchildren number in the tens of millions. 16,000 mothers gave rise to this dynasty. Because if each had 10 sons, then they had their sons, and then they were grandsons. Because remember, they lived a bit longer.
Did they also have one daughter, each one, along with 10 sons?
I'm not sure. Mentioned somewhere that there was a daughter, but I don't remember how many. Sorry?
One daughter.
One daughter. Each one had one daughter. Because otherwise, it's sick. Because the daughter then, and she was the last, generally, no? The 11th.
Charumate Rukunis.
Yeah, because the point is, if the daughter's last, then all the sons grow up, go away, they go to Gurukul and this and that. But then the daughter's there, and she doesn't go. You know, eventually she gets married. But by that time, then the sons have gone, now there's grandchildren, so you're always busy. Because like the sons, you can dress them up a bit, but once they get about 5, they don't like to be dressed up so much anymore. But girls, then, you know, it just gets better and better. You can dress them up, they really like it. Right? You know, so, yeah. Versus, that's why they're the youngest, not the oldest, otherwise. Then, is that right? Yeah. Verses 20 to 25. Krishna arranges the marriage of his sons and daughters. King Pariket said, how could Rukmi give his daughter to his enemy's son? So this is the question of the chapter. After all, Rukmi had been defeated by Lord Krishna in battle and was waiting for an opportunity to kill him. Yeah, but, you know, he's got to marry his daughter to somebody. Please explain this to me. Oh, learned one, how these two inimical parties became united through marriage. Because marriage means you're uniting two families. Like the modern sense is just, marriage means now who you're going to have sex with. But the Vedic concept was marriage meant connecting two families. Right? And then expanding the family. So that was the idea. Please explain this to me. Mystic yogis can perfectly see what was not yet happened, as well as things in the past or present, beyond the senses, remote or blocked by physical obstacles. Right, so it's not just they can just figure things out. They actually can see. They can see how things work. Krishna gives that. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, yogi can see the future and past and even the present, beyond normal perception, at a great distance or with intervening obstacles. Like what's that? They were doing kirtan between Prabhupada and the deities, and then somebody commented, you know, sorry Prabhupada, they were blocking your view that you couldn't see Radha Madhava. And he says, you can never block my view to seeing Radha. I always see Radha Madhava.
Maharaj.
That doesn't mean you stand in front of Prabhupada. It means you don't think that I'm the control Prabhupada sees, Prabhupada doesn't see. Right, yeah.
There was about 10, 12 years ago, an argument put forward that the TOVP would not be built here because Bhaktivinoda Thakur couldn't see it from his veranda because of the trees in the way.
This is one where you fall over and hit your head on the desk.
Yeah, similar.
So they want to cut down the tree?
No, it's not going to happen there. It's going to happen out here.
No, but it can't happen there because that's also where the tree would be. So they would either have to go down and, knock down Narasimha Prabhu's house and build it there, or, you know, go up and build it in Jagannath Mandir. Then
it's a large
tree. Wouldn't, yeah, then they could see out this way, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A tree could block his spiritual vision.
Yeah, no, it's just, there's a problem here. Problem. What to do? But if they did it down there, it'd be really close to the ghat, right? You pop across the Navadvip, it'd be really easy, right? Okay. Since yogis can see in this way what to speak of you, the best of devotees, or they can see Brahman, Atindram, which is obstructed by Maya, Vyavahitam, they see he who is most excellent, Viprakrishtam, Krishna, greater than Narayan because they practice Bhakti Yoga. So Rukmi can definitely be seen. Right? So you can see what's going to happen. So it's not that they can't see what's going to happen. So how does this all work out? Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, at her Swayamvar ceremony, Rukmavati herself chose Prajumna, who was the re-embodiment of Cupid. Then, although he fought alone on a single chariot, Prajumna defeated the assembled kings in battle and took her away. Right, so even though she saw him and chose him, still he would fight, because it's just what you do, right? You know, like that. Because she fought, and then, okay, he chose. And of course, it's nice, it has that aspect, but she chose and he fought. Now, that works. Like that. But she doesn't necessarily say she chose. Like that. Though Rukmi always remembered the enmity towards Lord Krishna, who had insulted him, in order to please his sister, he sanctioned his daughter's marriage to his nephew. Right? So because he wanted to please his sister, right? Because as far as that the girl wants this, he's never been too hot on that one. Because Rukmini wanted to marry Krishna, he didn't care, right? But he wanted to please his sister, right? Seeing that, you know, it had worked out that way, so better it's, you know. 26. The answer to King Parikshit's question is given here. Ultimately, Rukmi approved his daughter's marriage to Prajumna in order to please his sister, Rukmini, right? So that was the question. So that's why he did it. O King Bali, the son of Pritavarma, married Rukmini's young daughter, Large Eyes Charumati. Footnote 27. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, each queen had one daughter. In describing the marriage of Rukmini's daughter Charumati to Kritavarma's son Bali, the marriage of all the daughters is indicated. In other words, they all got married. So they're only going to mention, you know, major sons, grandsons, you know, in this case, the one daughter, like this. So then you know it's all going to go in this way. Because otherwise, after this, if you don't know Kritavarma, you know. Others you won't know. So if you go on, marry, you know, this one married that one, you don't know who it is. You know, so, you know, Sam married, you know, Samista, and this one, you know, and George married, you know, whatever it is, you know, like this. You can just go on and on. Then, you know, it's like, what do you care? Right? You know, so it's just, you give an indication that it's all nicely arranged, it's all properly done, and only then outstanding ones would be mentioned. Right? Because the storyline is there. Yes.
We said that in the Purana, it's necessary to show the line of the kings.
Yes.
And we had this experience in Canto 9.
Yes. But that is showing the line of kings. Here, it's not the line of kings, so you don't need to give the full detail. But there, they have to show all the connection of all the kings. So that means from Lord Brahma down to the time the Purana is spoken, then all the kings are there. So now when it's spoken in the next, you know, whoever, if there's anything else, then they'll be added. But otherwise, it's always that same basic principle. So, because most of them are all going to be there, only the last few change, you know, like that. You know, it's not that next Kali Yuga you have to change Brahma and all that. No, they're the same. They don't. Yes.
Many times we notice in the stories that it's actually more about uniting the families than uniting the couple.
Yes.
So where's the balance? It means we have to please the young people also somehow.
Means, how you say? But here the example was that Rukmavati, she chose Prajumna.
Yes.
So you see is that that's the principle. They're going to, who's not going to marry Krishna's son? Right? You know, like that. So that aspect is there, is that it's going to be pleasing. Because the quality, see, there's the aspect, the modern is that you're interested in the specific relationship. But then what happens after that there is no method in the modern system to guarantee anything. Does that make sense?
I'm not quite sure about specifically?
Means. The boy and girl, they want to marry each other specifically. And the modern culture, you know, will encourage that aspect. But beyond that, there is nothing within the modern cultural method to ensure anything beyond that. So in other words, if they hold it together because of their mutual attraction, that's the only reason the marriage works or their interaction with the families. That's it. So there's no science there at all. There's no effort by the families at all in this. Basically, it's just they kind of stay out of the way when they find out they like each other. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. So, you know, the father trying to scare the son-in-law. You know, stuff like that. You know, like that. You know, just pointing to the mantle and saying, "See that shotgun there?" Yeah. You know, the rest of it, we all know the lines, right? Yeah. So that, but in these times, the families, they look at who's qualified, what's their nature, who else is qualified, and then from that, then they choose somebody. So then the children, if they had a specifics, then that's fine, but the most important was they had a commitment to marriage. So the modern, there's no commitment to marriage. It's just, when the modes of nature, you know, lust and attachment overwhelm you, then marriage is a natural consequence, at least now. Who knows, you know, in the future it may not be so important. Like the de facto was big before, now it's not talked about as much. I think it goes on, but it's not the big thing, you know, like that. So then the commitment to marriage is not there. Maybe to that individual on one level, as long as that attachment's there, but if that attachment breaks, then it's not. But in the Vedic system, you're committed to the marriage. And so then, because the parents have arranged things so nicely that the nature between the two of them is so similar, therefore, how you're not, it means, you like yourself? Yeah, so if you're with somebody who's like yourself, why you're not going to like them? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. And if you don't like yourself, then there's someone who you know, it's just like yourself that they don't like their self. So how can you not like someone who doesn't like yourself, themselves, like you don't like yourself? You know, so it works out. No? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, you're there at the bridge and they're there at the bridge. And why are you here at the bridge? I'm going to jump off. Yeah, me too. You know, like that, you know, like that. Yeah, they jump. I was thinking, you know, want to get some breakfast? Yeah.
I can always jump later.
Yeah, we can jump later. Yeah, but his thing is they'll jump together. You know, at least that way then, you know, that fidelity will last, right?
Till death do you part.
Yes. Yeah, in any case, whatever. However you want to work it out. Yeah, just make sure the shot's done in slow motion. Jump off. Okay.
In Vedic presentation, every relationship is meant to increase the full society.
Yeah, somehow or other I was just stuck on. Okay. But if it was the French, really, then they would both know that it's there, they'd want to be together, but they would jump separately.
Right? Tied of it.
Yeah, they go the other side. Yes, the French.
We have many bridges.
Yes, many bridges. To facilitate all this romantic.
Yes. In Ganga, there is many bridges.
Yeah, yeah. It's a spiritual river, you know. Okay. So you were saying before I distracted you from.
French representative.
Yes.
All the stories about marriage and fighting like that, you know, etc. They indicate that when people develop a relationship, it is for the benefit of the full society.
Yes, because things go... they do nicely. They produce children who will do nicely in society. The families, then they are united. So there's relationships increase. That's the whole idea. But even though that's such a nice principle, it's a religious principle, unless it's connected to Krishna, it's still temporary and then it's all gone.
Yes.
So that's why then the Krishna conscious understanding, it's not that the religious aspects aren't there, just they have to be seen and connected with Krishna. But for us, it's that it's either Krishna or religion. We can't do both.
Yes.
But that's the Vedic thing, is you can do both. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, does that make sense? Yes. And so since it's something not connected to Krishna, it's just religion, then why not follow the irreligion of my background? That would be so much more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know. Does that make sense? So the whole they're showing how the things work. These are the details that are there. Does that make sense? So in other words, we see from this, now she chooses him, right? Means Rukmavati. Prajumna makes that effort to do things for her, to impress her, to do things. So you can understand the whole rest of the relationship will work like this. So you don't have to give the day-to-day details. You know, you don't have to bring up then when she said, how do I look, and then how we respond. You know how it's going to go. Like that. So even if she then starts playing with it and harasses him, he'll keep following until she's satisfied. Does that make sense? Because the interaction is what's important. So obstacles are put up only for the purpose that they prolong the interaction. Does that make sense? And so in doing that, then it works out. But he will continue until she's happy.
Yes.
And she has the confidence that she can put up obstacles, and he'll continue until she has no more obstacles. So therefore, with confidence she can put up obstacles, and with confidence he can break them down, because he knows then he does that, she'll be happy. So then the whole thing is gained from there. Like that. Does that make sense? So you don't have to go to Pluto or Mars to figure out what's going on. Or Venus, yes. Or Venus. I think, yeah, it means if you don't use those, you end up on Pluto. Yeah. Okay, Rukmi gave his granddaughter, Rochana, to his daughter's son, Aniruddha, despite Rukmi's relentless feud with Lord Hari. Although Rukmi considered this marriage irreligious, he wanted to please his sister, bound as he was by ropes of affection. The BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami explains that according to worldly standards, one should not give one's beloved granddaughter to the grandson of one's bitter enemy. Right? Because where you're insulted, you generally don't go there. If you go to someone's house, you're insulted there, you don't go back there. You know, there's a program there. You don't go. You just don't go to that place. That's the worldly standards. That's what Manu mentioned. So therefore, for him, by marrying his granddaughter to the grandson of Krishna, by that law of Manu, it would be irreligious. Right?
No.
Yes.
But he first marrying his daughter to the son of Krishna was as irreligious as this one. Why mention this one?
Because that one he mentioned that it was to please his sister. Now he's already pleased his sister, so he wants to please her again. Yeah. Thus we find the following injunction. Dvishad annam na bhoktavyam dvishantam naiva bojayeta. One should not eat an enemy's food or feed an enemy. There is also the following prohibition. Aishvargyam loka vidvishtam dharmam apyacharen natu. One should not execute religious injunctions if they will obstruct one's journey to heaven, or if they are odious to human society. Right? So then one has to be careful how to balance these things and all that. So that then they have to be seen in its proper context and how others will see. That's why then it mentions that devotees, they don't bathe in public, they don't eat in public, they don't sleep in public, because the public then will have comments and things to say. So they don't do, even though these religious, you don't do it where they'll see. It doesn't mean you give up your duties. You just don't perform the duty in that context, or it will disturb others. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yes.
Mentions that one should not feed an enemy.
One should not feed an enemy.
Yeah, but there are some injunctions which mention that if you have the guest who is an enemy, you should feed
them. If they end up coming as your guest, you feed them. Like when Krishna went to Rukmi's place for the marriage of the the son and daughter, did he not feed Krishna? Did he not do everything very nicely and lavishly as kings would?
He did.
So then he followed that. But generally speaking, you wouldn't. As if his sister wasn't Krishna's wife, would he have married any of his children or grandchildren to Krishna's? No. But because they were, so therefore pleasing his sister, therefore then you follow the other. If you are dealing with an enemy, then you deal, they shouldn't even know that they're an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, in general, you would avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Then the question is why he didn't want to please her before that when she wanted to marry Krishna. Now he wanted...
Because it was already arranged by those kind of... Because he was trying to avoid Krishna. But since she did end up marrying him, then, to make that kind of aspect. Because then on that aspect, they didn't see it so important that she married Krishna. She would be more pleased... He wants to please his sister, therefore he arranged she marry Shishupal, because she figured he's a much better match. Like that is the situation, his qualification, their relationships with the family and everything, because then the two families will be nicely together, everything like that. Well, if Krishna's there, except for this marriage ceremony, you don't see them together. So he pointed out here that Lord Krishna is not really the enemy of anyone. As the Lord states in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Suridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shantim ritchati. One achieves peace by understanding that I am the well-wishing friend of every living being. Although Lord Krishna is everyone's friend, Rukmi could not appreciate this fact and considered Lord Krishna his enemy. Still out of affection for his sister, he gave his granddaughter to Aniruddha. Finally, we should note that, contrary to the prohibition quoted here, one may not give up the basic principles of spiritual life merely because such principles are unpopular with people in general, right? Because mentioned here, he was talking about material things. Material rules then have to be balanced with other material rules governing the situation, right? In other words, there's material rules governing the situation, one aspect of it, but there's material rules governing another aspect. Generally, they'll work nicely together. Or with minimal intelligence, you can make them balance. But sometimes they're quite conflicting. So then you have to see is that, then which rule you're following. It's not that you're giving up the one, you're following a religious rule. It's not that you're giving up religious rules. Just instead of favoring one, you'd be favoring the other. Does that make sense? So that's why he says you don't give up the basic principle of spiritual life because these principles aren't popular with people in general. It's like we go out in Harinam, they like it or not. If it's against the law and all that, then you don't do it because, it's not going to get you very far. But if it's not against the law, even though people, you still do it. Because this idea of popular is overrated. Because popular changes in a moment. And so by doing this, they get the spiritual benefit. Now, in doing it, you present as nicely as possible. As you see, probably some of the nicest arrangements of Hari Nam, from what I see here, is then, again, going back to the French Hari Nam that were there before. And I think they may have been arranged by Indadu Namaraj, and then he would continue that on the tour. Then he would have everybody in nicely lines, everyone dressed nicely, everyone dancing nicely, and he'd even have people dressed up in as Krishna and all these different things. They'd be going and nice tunes, pleasant tunes, and they'd follow everything. They'd go across the street, they'd stay in twos. They wouldn't just do the Indian thing and stuff like that. So they would do all these things. So people would see it as it's cultural. It's different, but it's culture, because we have to remember, culture's always different. Right? It doesn't matter where they are in the world, they're going and eating pizza, unless you're from Italy, then it's not your food. But you're eating it somewhere else. And even if you're from Italy, there's a good chance whatever pizza someone else cooks is not your food. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because whatever it is, whatever region you're from, that's pizza, everything else is not pizza. Like that. Like that. So the whole point is that culture means it has a particular quality to it that's appreciated by people who appreciate culture. It doesn't matter what it is. So this idea that, okay, well, the Vedic culture, you know, we're in the West, it won't be appreciated, so we won't do it. That it'll only be not appreciated by people who have no culture. Right? And the point is why bother trying to please those who have no culture? Right? Does that make sense? You don't want to make trouble. If you're going to go out in Harinam, they're all going to come out with their shotguns. Then, okay, yes, then you maybe avoid that and go to a different neighborhood. But the point is that those who can be pleased, you're working to please them. Why waste your time? No intelligent person wastes their time trying to please people who can't be pleased. That's a waste of time. Why would you do that? So therefore, spiritual life is pleasing to the soul. And so those souls who can appreciate the nature of soul and those things, then you're trying to please them. And now people who can be pleased are less than those who can't be pleased. Therefore, then, you know, you go to that audience. But this idea, no, it has to be where the mass is. We're not getting mass anyway.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Alright. But that is being brought up a lot, like by people giving class and all this stuff, like, you know.
Yeah, just like we brought it up.
No, I mean the point that, you know, we have to get involved with as many people as possible and it should be channeled.
Yes, we have to get as many people as possible from those who can be involved. But know who you target.
Yeah. That point isn't.
Point is yes, you're trying to, but it's not that numbers. I'm talking about where I'm talking in context of here. I'm not talking about, well, let's say someone is talking about preaching and Sankirtan and that, so you have to meet as many people as you can and that. I'm not talking that, because that's what we would say also. Lord Chaitanya says, whoever you see, whoever you meet, you speak about Krishna. Here we're talking about that you're being careful on applying your religious principles in areas where it won't be appreciated. But, as being pointed out here, that doesn't apply to spiritual principles. So therefore, we shouldn't think, oh no, but we gotta fit in and we gotta please everybody. Well, we're not talking about preaching. We're talking about a material social construct here. So that, we're not worried about it. Yes, we can present it in a nicer way, because that's what we're supposed to do anyway. We're supposed to be cultured. Like that. We're supposed to do that. And if we don't do that, that's due to our lack of culture and not seeing the culture. Otherwise, you know, at least before, you go to some gentleman's house and how they deal with you and this and that. If we dealt with everybody who came to the temple like that, then the view of the devotees would be so different. But we don't do that. And is that the fault of the Vedic culture? No, that's our fault. Because so many of these, you know, devotees have gone and seen that. So that's what you're supposed to apply. Does that make sense? That's what we're supposed to do. As Lord Krishna states in Gita 18:66, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. The last word in spiritual duties is to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And that duty takes precedence over all secondary injunctions. Right? So, therefore, the primary is there, then you apply the secondary, which will be in supportive for the situation. Right? Moreover, in this age, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has kindly presented a sublime process that will attract all sincere people to come to the point of surrendering to the Lord. So, therefore, we want to please all sincere people. Those who are not sincere, okay, we don't want to, you know, that they should give us trouble. But it's not about, you can't please people that aren't sincere. There's no question. It just doesn't, no one tries. That's the thing. In the real world, no one tries. Like that. By following Lord Chaitanya's blissful process of chanting, dancing, feasting, and discussing spiritual philosophy, right? Here Prabhupada gives, you know, this is the things that are given by Prabhupada, right? Mm-hmm. So then, that's the thing, is now we have to wait for, not Home Depot, Hillsong. this. You know, to bring this to the forefront. Oh, it's the latest cutting edge thing. Yeah, we've been talking about it forever. Anyone can easily go back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Still, some may argue that the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement should not practice in the Western countries those ceremonies or activities that displease people in general. We respond that even in the Western countries, when people are properly informed of the activities of the Krishna Conscious Movement, they generally appreciate this great spiritual instruction. Isn't it fabulous?
Vibhuti Purport.
Yes, the Vibhuti Purport. Yeah. Yes. It's fun. This is exactly the point, is that, oh no, they won't like it, so we shouldn't do it, we should change. No, but if the answer is here. They should be properly informed. That's the whole point of preaching. Right? Yes, isn't it good? Those who are especially envious, we should write that one down. Those who are especially envious of God will not appreciate any type of religious movement. And since such persons are themselves little better than animals, they cannot impede the great Krishna consciousness movement. Right? Just as the envious Rukmi could not impede the performance of Lord Krishna's pure pastime. So that's a purport worth remembering. What's that to? 22? Because it says it's from 25? Because it doesn't say.
Certainly the sense of irony.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. 25.
25. Yeah. For 25. Okay.
No, they're saying 1061. 20.
Yeah. Okay, I don't think we're going to get much farther. So this is now the pastime. Lord Balaram slays Rukmi. Right? So here we see is that the aspect of that you're following the religious principles and how will be the best result from it according to religious principles. Now, therefore, one religious principle for another, you see which will apply better in that. It's not that the removal of religious principles. Then you see, as the BBT purport then points out here, quoting that very strongly, that therefore then you have to see that the spiritual is the one that ultimately is being established by whichever religious principle is applied. If that's not applied, then there's no real meaning to the process. Right? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur. Amen.